From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Potts. Today on Target, we'll unpack all the headlines from the last month of Gettysburg College news, including the revocation of an honorary degree and the departure of a president.
Then, co-sports editors Elizabeth Hillfrank and Claire Healy sit down with head swimming coach Mike Raleigh, and Ben and I will talk to DPS officer Ricky Pierce. Stay with us.
And we have some major news. Gettysburg College president Janet Morgan Riggs, who is a graduate of Gettysburg College and has served as president since, I believe, 2008, 9, almost 10 years, I do believe. In any case, 2018-19 will be her last as the president of Gettysburg College, our 14th president. Janet Morgan Riggs, who has also served as the provost, the executive assistant to the president, not to mention chair of the psychology department and a tenured faculty member in that department, will retire at the end of the 2018-19 academic year. She made this announcement at a faculty meeting last week after she informed the Board of Trustees of her decision. And she says she will not be a lame duck in her final year. She still has lots that she would like to do. But at this stage in the ball game, she made an agreement with her husband, Ed Riggs, who has also been associated with the college for a number of years, that they would do some things in their retirement, and she's following through on that. So the college will unveil its search process in the coming days, I imagine. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Jamie, I know you've been a big fan of President Riggs over the years.
Absolutely. President Riggs has certainly, I think, been a unifying figure for the campus. And I know that there were gasps in the room when she announced that she's going to be retiring at the faculty meeting. And so I think, you know, her retiring, I think it makes sense at the end of this Capitol campaign. And it's a similar timeline to when President Gordon Holland retired. But I think the campus is definitely going to feel that loss, and it is big shoes to fill for whoever ultimately gets selected. And it's, you know, as you try to look at internal candidates, there really aren't that many that stick out. So it's probably most likely going to end up being somebody new to the campus community.
Yeah, and so I've been kind of putting out some feelers in my conversations with various senior college officials over the last week or so, and the feeling that I get is that it will be most likely an external candidate, that there really aren't a whole lot of folks on the inside, whether you would think about someone like the provost, Chris Zappi, or really anyone in that provost office. I know the name Jennifer Bloomquist has come up from time to time, but really, I think what the general sentiment I've heard is that President Riggs, while she has done some great work, so to say, is at this point not pushing the college towards new horizons, and that they're looking for someone from the outside who will chart that next course. Gordon Holland's legacy was really taking Gettysburg from a small Lutheran institution to a nationally prominent liberal arts college. And President Riggs, of course, we're skipping over Katie Will, who had a short tenure in between, a controversial tenure in between, but that President Riggs brought a lot of continuity, brought a lot of Gettysburg energy, having been an alumna herself, and that she helped the college weather, the economic downturn, has weathered a lot of, challenging issues. But I think what one reflection I heard was that the name of our current strategic plan is the unfinished work, as if, as in there's work that we've started and we need to finish, and that's going to be Janet Morgan Riggs's legacy at Gettysburg College. But the next person is going to have to start a chapter of work that's not yet begun. And so to that end, it seems likely from all the conversations I've had with, senior faculty, with administrators in Penn Hall, that it's more than likely we'll be seeing an external candidate come in.
Absolutely. And so Ben will be following that process next year. So definitely stay tuned for more information as the search committee is announced and all of that. Probably things will be happening over the summer, and we'll be keeping you up to date on our website as well, gettysburgeon.com.
Absolutely. So the next, the Board of Trustees meeting yielded three key pieces of news. President Riggs' departure was one of them, although that was announced the day before the Board of Trustees met for the final time this academic year. But what happened on Friday was that the Board of Trustees, in light of a conviction on three counts, Bill Cosby has had his honorary degree from Gettysburg College revoked. Cosby was the commencement speaker in 1997, and by all accounts, was an excellent commencement speaker. You know, sometimes commencement speeches can be pretty dry, and everyone who recalls Bill Cosby's commencement speech says that it was fabulous. However, well,
nobody would ever accuse Bill Cosby of being a dry individual, certainly. But, you know, in light of recent events,
in light of the conviction, the college, the Board of Trustees implemented a policy it passed last year, which is that by a two-thirds vote, an honorary degree can be revoked. And that's exactly what happened. We weren't in the room. Boards of Trustees meetings at a private institution are obviously closed, but I can't imagine the vote was anything short of unanimous or at the very least overwhelming. It seemed to be a foregone conclusion from the outset. Nevertheless, college Democrats and Students Against Sexual Assault spearheaded a petition. Towards that end, they delivered it to President Riggs and to Dean Ramsey, Julie Ramsey. They delivered it on Friday afternoon, about an hour after the Board of Trustees had actually made that decision. I think it was largely symbolic nonetheless, but they did gather a fair number of signatures from student leaders as well as faculty and administrators. So, you know, Bill Cosby, no longer an honorary degree holder at Gettysburg College. My academic advisor, Dr. Shirley Ann Warshaw, over in the political science department, has been pushing for this for some time. And she was quoted in an article I wrote saying, you know, Gettysburg College is catching up to other institutions. And
indeed,
in some respects, she's right. Well, in many respects, she's right. We even his alma mater, Temple, revoked the honorary degree that they awarded him. Yale, for the first time ever, revoked an honorary degree. And I believe, as far as we can tell, this is the first time Gettysburg College has revoked an honorary degree. And so pivoting, and we'll get into commencement 2018 a little bit later. But this year, Howard Fineman, former global editorial director at the Huffington Post and currently an MSNBC contributor, will be the commencement speaker, and he will receive an honorary degree, as will Francisco Nunez, who is a musician, the founding director of the New York City Young People's Chorus, and Rebecca Halsted, the first female graduate of West Point to become a general in the United States Army. Those three individuals will receive honorary degrees at commencement, which is coming up next weekend. And the third item of business from that Board of Trustees meeting, the faculty, the students, and now the Board of Trustees have all ratified the Statement of Institutional Philosophy on Freedom of Expression. We've read it on this podcast. We've discussed it on this podcast. Jennifer Bloomquist, Associate Provost for Faculty Development, Dean of Social Science and Interdisciplinary Programs, and Chair of the Freedom of Expression Work Group. Yes, I've now memorized her title, has been on this podcast to discuss it. We've talked about it at length, and it is now the law of the land.
It's not actually policy, and the college isn't getting back to us on how they plan to change policy to reflect the new philosophy. So that's sort of a big question mark as we head into next year.
Yeah, I mean, I ran into Dr. Bloomquist earlier today, and she's been out of town. So she said she'd be following up on that soon, although really I think her work is
done,
complete,
yeah,
on this particular issue, unless she also gets charged with heading up implementation, which I don't think she'd be too pleased given
no.
that assignment. Who knows?
That's probably SLC's job. The Student Life Council can handle that.
Committee.
It used
Doesn't
to be
matter.
Council, but whatever.
All right, pivoting. On to other internal Gettysburg College news. Vimbai Kazaboni, assistant professor of music and director of orchestral activities in the Sunderman Conservatory, has announced his resignation. He will take a position at the Boston Conservatory, part of the Berklee College of Music in Boston, Massachusetts, and he will leave the conservatory at the end of this year. Casaboni finished a two-year tenure during which he was a pioneer in many respects, a maverick, you could say, who really shook things up in the orchestral program. He wrote some original music. He did some themed concerts, including one in the fall about sort of political music from the United States and the Soviet Union. And Casaboni certainly breathed interesting life. I don't want to say he breathed new life into the orchestral program, as that implies there was no life in it before, but he certainly led it in a different direction. A native of Zimbabwe, Professor Casaboni also taught about musicology, and he was actually scheduled in the fall to teach Theory 5, orchestration, but no longer. Casaboni certainly was someone who, I don't want to say he was a controversial figure, but I think people had some strong opinions about him, some positive, and others took more nuanced views. I think he was respected artistically, but I think he certainly jolted the orchestral program in a different direction than it had been going before, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes from here. Of course, James Day will be taking over as director of the conservatory in July. Day coming from the College of Arts and Sciences, or Arts and Communication, I guess, rather, at the College of New Jersey, where he's currently the assistant dean, and he'll be taking over as director of the conservatory, replacing Kay Hoke, whose retirement will come to pass right at the end of the semester.
Yeah, and news of this departure certainly has shook up several people, many people in the conservatory that we've spoken with. They weren't expecting it. It sort of came out of nowhere. And I know that even the administration and faculty didn't even find out until earlier this week that this departure was happening. So really all around kind of a surprise departure.
Yeah, that's correct. Today we're recording this podcast on Thursday afternoon. Casaboni sent an email to majors and minors, as well as members of the symphony orchestra earlier this afternoon. I've since spoken with Jack Ryan, the Dean of Arts and Humanities, as well as Chris Zappi, the provost, and they said that they learned about this on Tuesday. And so this certainly seems to have come to pass quickly. It's interesting, though. Music majors and minors who performed juries this semester, their big end of the semester performances, those wrapped up yesterday. And today they're learning that certainly someone who I think people largely acknowledged was destined for greener pastures, so to say, than the Sunderman Conservatory. Not that this was a slouch of a position, but it certainly seemed like it could have been a stepping stone for him. Mm-hmm. Someone who did not have a lot of experience teaching coming in, but certainly was a well-regarded conductor on the international stage, and someone who certainly, when you get a call to the Boston Conservatory, you're going to take the phone call. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes from here. I think he'll be heading up directing a wind ensemble there. He'll be doing some new music things. That's something about which I know he's very passionate. He wrote in the fall just a gorgeous piece, My Heart's in the Highlands, which was based on a 1789 Robert Burns poem by the same name. And so he's certainly a very talented individual, someone who I think probably attracted students to come to Gettysburg in some respects. And so it'll be interesting to see who they hire. I spoke with Chris Zappi, the provost, this afternoon, and he said that there are a couple of approaches they may use to fill the position. One would be a full-time visiting assistant professor to fulfill all of Casaboni's responsibilities, which would also include teaching. But perhaps more likely would be an adjunct part-time appointment to direct the orchestra. And certainly it'll be interesting to see how that happens. Gettysburg, to some extent, is kind of in the middle of nowhere, which makes attracting someone from one of the big cities, particularly New York, challenging. Certainly someone from Harrisburg or D.C. or even over the Lancaster Symphony Orchestra, is certainly a strong orchestra as well. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And you know, that's not the time of year you hope to launch a search.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say is, you know, they're just now starting this search, and you have this changeover of the director happening in the middle of the time when they should be searching. And the college is really left kind of holding the bag here with, you know, just the summer to find a new candidate. And since it took so much time to find Casaboni to begin with, two searches and a year, it's, you know, kind of concerning the quality of candidate that might you might find in a 2 to 3 month search that's interrupted by a changeover in management and things like that. So certainly it's going to be interesting and to see what happens with the orchestral program in the fall and the kind of dynamics that a possible adjunct might bring to the equation.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side of that, though, is that if you're simply hiring that position as an adjunct position, the time commitment could be such that you do get an incredibly talented person who, you know, in the number of hours a week that the position is expected, could come from somewhere else and could be a high-quality person, a high-quality candidate for a year. And certainly, I think that Kay Hoke, who is still in her job through the end of June, or perhaps at the end of the semester, and I know Russell McCutcheon, who's kind of the associate director, and Chris Zappi said this afternoon, I think they're taking it very seriously to hire someone of the caliber that the conservatory, which is a budding program, a budding conservatory, it's not an old conservatory, it's between 10 and 15 years old, you know, and it'll be interesting to see where they go. But I think they're taking this seriously. While I think they were surprised, I would be surprised if they don't hire a qualified, well-qualified candidate to direct the orchestra in the fall. My gut feeling is that it will be that they'll separate Casaboni's responsibilities. The likelihood they'll find a visiting assistant professor or visiting professor of some sort who's going to take on the orchestra program and teaching Theory 5 in the same first semester over the next 3 months seems like a bit of a pie-in-the-sky proposition, although who knows? But I think they will certainly be calling on all of their connections and see who they can find that will take over that orchestra program, which has put on some stellar performances. You know, they did Beethoven 5 this semester. They did the William Tell Overture last semester. Pretty good stuff coming out of the Gettysburg College Symphony Orchestra in the Casaboni era. And I think that it'll be interesting to see. And I think that there is certainly a hope that they will continue to move forward in the who knows era.
Yeah, certainly. So we'll be keeping you up to date on that as well.
And one final piece of news, Nick Arbaugh, formerly elected treasurer just a month ago, now has been elected president of the Gettysburg College Student Senate. This, of course, comes on the heels of a revote after the initially elected president, Haley Gluhanich, was found responsible of committing violations of the Senate's election procedures, the election protocol. She was accused and found to have knocked on the doors of prospective voters in first-year residence halls, and as such was disqualified from participation in a second election. Nick Arbaugh, who had been elected treasurer, threw his hat in the ring, defeated Alex Jay as well as Anna Burns for that position, and he will be a... It'll be an interesting, I feel like I've used the word interesting about 72 times in this podcast, but in all of these cases, new people are filling roles that have been previously held by established people or by talented people or, you know, by people who, in all of these cases, I think, took their positions very seriously, and the new people will have to have big shoes to fill is I guess where I'm headed with this. And so Nick, who has made reform of Senate a centerpiece of his campaign, particularly on budgetary matters, which I think is largely why he was interested in serving as treasurer, will now have the full Senate at his disposal to enact his reform agenda. And the first matter up for his consideration will be appointing a treasurer, and who knows where he'll go. There's been some chatter that perhaps he'll appoint Haley Gluhanich. I don't know. He has said that he'll consider all qualified applicants, but, you know, it'd be an interesting choice. Jamie, I don't know what thoughts you have.
Well, on the subject of Haley Gluhanich, I think certainly that could be a way to sort of start to heal sort of the divide that has existed as a result of this whole investigation process. I know there were a lot of bad feelings on both sides. And so bringing Haley into that role could be a way to sort of try to bring Senate back together. And I know that he's looking for someone who's going to work with him to support fiscal responsibility with the student Senate budget. And I think that he believes that Haley will be somebody who will hold up fiscal responsibility in that role. And so I think she's definitely a viable candidate, and one that I think he's going to consider strongly from the applicant pool as we move into the fall.
Yeah. And who knows? Lots of potentially interested folks could apply.
Absolutely. So that wraps up our news segment. And so now we're going to move into the interview that Claire Healy and Elizabeth Hillfrank, our co-sports editors at the Gettysburgian, outgoing co-sports editors, did with head swimming coach Mike Raleigh. So we'll have that interview for you right after this.
To start off, so you've had 33 seasons with the Bullets, 42 conference titles now. Yes, I believe 42, because you were at 41 before this year. So 42 Centennial Conference titles, over 50 All-Americans. You've gotten people into national competitions, multiple Conference Coach of the Year titles. So what's your secret? What's been working for you these past 30 years?
Who's been keeping count of all of this?
All athletic communications.
Oh, good golly. It's a mystery to me. Those kinds of things you have to ask other people. I don't know. I don't know that there's, I followed a formula. No. I've enjoyed my job a great deal. And I think that helps. I like coaching college athletes.
Why?
I think they're interesting. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, college life is 4 years that you really can't replicate, and sometimes you don't want to replicate. You know, there it's just it's a time in your life that is very different. And most of them, I interact for 4 years with them, get to watch the growth and the progress. It's just, it's interesting. And it's really amusing. If you don't let them get to you, it's funny. being at practice every day and things like that, it's pretty amusing.
Mm-hmm. So then, I guess, more specifically, what do you like about coaching at Gettysburg that's made you stick around for as long as you have?
Oh, I really believe strongly in the liberal arts education and residential colleges, and this was a good place to be if that's the kind of environment you're looking for, and I was. It's just been a, you know, the athletes here do it voluntarily. The administration gives a lot of support. You know, they think athletics is good, a good positive thing, and they're right. And so it's a good environment to work in.
Now, you mentioned before you started that when you were in college, you didn't like to lose. So do you think that mantra continues into your coaching career here?
Yeah, I'm competitive. But, you know, I learned very early on in coaching that it really doesn't matter what the coach wants. It's what the athletes want. And if they want to be really competitive and vie for a conference title or make it to NCAAs. That's got to be their decision. So, you know, I've never approached the team at the beginning of the season and said, you know, this is what I want you to do. You know, let's win the conference meet or whatever. No, it's you need to sit down and decide which goals are individually and collectively, and then let me know, and I'm going to do my best to help you get there. Because it doesn't really matter what a coach wants. Mm-hmm. You can't force winning on people, I like competition. It's great. It's pretty pure. You match up, different team, other side of the field or other side of the pool or on the track, and the people we compete against are just like our students. They're at good institutions that are academically very strong, and so there's big commitment there. I mean, it's fun. It's you can't hide anything. It's pretty pure stuff. You can make excuses, but you know it is what it is, and the objective is to outscore the other team that day. It's pretty clear. I mean, you want to do it without cheating and having good sportsmanship, but other than that, it's okay to want to beat somebody. There's nothing wrong with it. So I like that about it.
Do you have a favorite event that you coach or to watch in swimming?
No. I like to watch really tough people compete and compete hard, and it doesn't matter whether it's the 50 or the 1650. It doesn't matter.
What would you say has been one of your favorite moments to watch over the last 30 years? Like any particular meet or an event that sticks out to you?
I've got a terrible memory. That's the thing. And the thing is, I don't look back. I guess when I retire, that's what I'll do for 6 months is look back at everything and try to remember. But, you know, every year's different, and I try not to make comparisons. I mean, it's hard not to forget. We had a swimmer named Lynn Cassidy, who won the 500 freestyle NCAAs a couple of years, and her junior year when she won it, she set the national record, and it stood for about 9 years, which is pretty long. I don't think I'll ever forget that particular race. So that one sort of stands out.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a great race, too.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. 9 years, too. That is, like, that's a good length of time, yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's really cool. And so you say you don't, you know, look back too much, but looking forward, you are this year graduating some very important contributors in the past few years with Savannah and Ty graduating. What are your prospects for the upcoming years?
It's up to my assistant coach. He really does all the recruiting. I mean, you know, you're successful. It's not that I'm a better coach than anybody in the conference. In fact, I think there are several who are better coaches than me. You know, you have to have enough talent. And a lot of that is situational. You know, the institution you work at, the relationship you have with an admissions department, an attitude of administrators and presidents. But I've been in a position where we had the opportunity, and it's a really fine institution and attracted a lot of good people, where you know, we were able to, over the years, always accumulated enough talent, and that's sort of the bottom line in any sport. I mean, talent's generally going to win out. I mean, when it's even, then heart and toughness mm-hmm. and desire come in, but talent's going to win out. So, but you know, we look to be having two pretty good first year classes come in next year, so I think we'll continue to roll along. But, you know, I mean, it is a good senior group. It was a big senior female class, and just a great class. And you know, you can replace the swimming talent. You can't always replace the personalities, which create the dynamics. And that's going to be hard to replace. There were only two senior guys, and they were really good guys. But numbers-wise, the amount of points that Tyler could score, you know, yeah, it takes two pretty good freshmen to make up for that, but it only takes two pretty good freshmen. It's not like, you know, you're losing lots of points. People tend to fall in line, you know, you probably know from track, they'll fall in line behind, the really good ones who are out there, and everybody else sort of just falls in line. And you need, it's nice to have somebody at that level that you're in the pool with every day. All the boats rise up.
Yeah, you want to be that All-American like he is, so yeah. It is a little inspiring, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So did you always know you wanted to be a coach?
No,
or did this...
never wanted to be a coach. Still kind of deciding what I wanted to. It was happenstance. It was one of those one things led to another. Because maybe 4.5 years out of college, I worked in mental health.
Huh.
In different odd situations. But being a history major, I wasn't going to go very far in mental health. You have to have a master's in psychology. But I was volunteer coaching on the side, and kind of one thing led to another. And I did the age group thing for about 6 years. Parents drove me crazy. Called a coach at my alma mater, UNC, and said, I'd like to try college. And he happened to have a job opening. Did that, really liked it. Said, you know what? I think I'm going to work on a college campus. I don't have a PhD, so I can't be a professor. Yep. You know, it looks like a good gig, and it turned out to be.
How did you end up at Gettysburg?
I was applying for lots of jobs. I knew of Gettysburg barely. I think I knew one person who had gone to school there. But job opened, and there were some connections, and they hired me, and I'm still here. But it's a good, it's a great place to be if this is what you want to do. You're never going to make a lot of money, but everything else is pretty nice.
It is interesting, even though it's just kind of all happenstance, that you started in mental health, because I know, like, my coach also was in mental health. And I feel like in swimming and track, people always say that racing and practicing is so much is like almost as mentally challenging as the physical aspect sometimes. So I feel like that, whether it was intended or not, kind of infiltrates.
Well, I think that my time in mental health, I was dealing in different situations. One of them was out west with Native American boys who committed crimes on their reservation. I was in a program that was an alternate to jail. And then after that, I was in a psychology department of a big institution where I was in charge of the males between 15 and 28 who were dangerous. So I wasn't learning about, you know, competitive mental toughness. It's helped in being able to coach college kids, and that I'm going, I have great perspective because I worked in that situation. So I'm not really getting too upset when people do stupid things. I was working with some really dangerous people.
Yeah,
but it was, It was interesting. Just didn't have a future in it.
I do have one question. There are a lot of changes happening in the athletic department right now, namely with a new athletic director likely coming in. Well, definitely coming in. How are you going to approach, like, having someone new to deal with? Like, are you excited for the change, or?
I'm not afraid of change. Change can be scary, but I think it'll be good. And, you know, we've got a new, our football coach we knew. We just announced today, I think, the new basketball coach, men's basketball coach. I think, you know, new ideas, fresh approaches, they're good. Not that we're stale, but I think you're going to see it on the higher level at Gettysburg College in the next year. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think there are going to be some new people here at our highest level, probably.
I believe we have Ben Ponce with our Bullet Report.
And it's been another exciting week in Gettysburg College sports action. On April the 12th, the men's track team finished 10th of 16 at the Messiah Invitational, while the women's track team finished 9th of 16. The baseball team lost to Johns Hopkins 11-3. The women's tennis team defeated Muhlenberg 9-0, while the men lost 9-0. The men's track and women's track teams both participated in the Bucknell Outdoor Classic, but did not receive a team score. The women's golf team finished 2nd of 5 at the Dickinson Red Devil All-American Classic. The men's lacrosse team defeated Haverford 11-5. The women's lacrosse team defeated Haverford 18-6. The baseball team defeated Ursinus 11-7, but then lost 15-1. Talk about a tale of two games there. The softball team defeated Ursinus 9-1 and then won again 4-2. The women's track team and the men's track team participated again on Sunday in the Bucknell Outdoor Classic, but again did not receive a team score. The softball team had two games postponed against Swarthmore on Monday. The women's golf team finished 1st of 6 at the Gettysburg Spring Invitational. The baseball team had games postponed against Juniata. The softball team had two more games postponed against Franklin and Marshall. The men's golf team won the Gettysburg Spring Invitational, finishing 1st out of 15 teams. The baseball team defeated Dickinson 10-9. The women's tennis team lost to Dickinson 7-2. The men's tennis team lost 6-3. The women's lacrosse team defeated Dickinson 13-5 and lost to York College of Pennsylvania 14-12. The women's softball team defeated Messiah 3-2, then lost 4-0. The baseball team was defeated by Dickinson 10-1. The women's golf team finished 1st out of 8 in round 1. The women's track team finished 1st of 11 at the Mason-Dixon Invitational, while the men finished 2nd of 15. The women's tennis team lost to Washington College of Maryland 9-0, and the men's tennis team lost 7-2. The baseball team lost to Swarthmore 14-1, then defeated Swarthmore 3-1. The women's lacrosse team defeated Bryn Mawr 24-3, and thus endeth the Bullet Report.
Thanks so much for that, Ben. Now I'd like to share a little bit about the commencement weekend schedule. Obviously, commencement weekend is coming up this upcoming weekend. The 19th and the 20th are the two main days of commencement. And so we wanted to share some information about the different events that are going on throughout the weekend. So on Saturday morning, bright and early, there's an Army ROTC commissioning ceremony and the Phi Beta Kappa induction ceremony. And then at 1 o'clock is Spring Honors Day, and that will be in the chapel. And there's after that, there's departmental receptions. And so all the different departments hold receptions at various locations outside. And that information is on the commencement schedule. And this is where faculty, students, and parents get to interact and sort of say their goodbyes. And many departments award honor cords at this time. And so that's just an opportunity before the baccalaureate ceremony for faculty and students to interact one last time. And so the main event on Saturday is actually at 4 o'clock. It's the baccalaureate service. And interestingly, baccalaureate will be held outside this year. So that service will be at the graduation commencement site at the Beecham Portico at Penn Hall, and that will begin at 4 o'clock. And so baccalaureate is described as a long-standing tradition and an integral part of commencement weekend. It's a welcoming and inclusive service that provides an opportunity for graduates and their families to come together in thanksgiving for all that has brought them to this day, celebrate their accomplishments and the hope for the future, for what the future will hold. And so that event, you are required to wear your academic regalia that you'll wear also for commencement. So that is once again starts at 4 o'clock. And then that evening in the ballroom, starting at 8 o'clock, there is the senior class graduation party that students and their families are invited to. And that will be host provider, but you need to bring your college ID for that. And so on Sunday morning, there's a mass bright and early, 8:30 in Christ Chapel, that's open to graduates and their families. And then at 9 a.m., the commencement site will open for seating, and students will begin lining up at Bream Gym at 9:45. The actual commencement itself begins with the processional at 11 a.m., and it should be wrapped up by about 1:30 when there's going to be a reception in Servo. So lots of things going on over commencement weekend, and this is just sort of a summary of what's going on. For more information on each of these events, you can go to gettysburg.edu, and under the Students tab, there is a commencement information link there. So now we're going to go right after this to our interview with DPS Officer Ricky Pierce. So stay with us. Joining us today on Target to talk about his role in the Department of Public Safety and his background is Officer Ricky Pierce. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
So can we just start out with your background and sort of your life before you came here to Gettysburg College?
Sure. I am originally from California, the San Francisco Bay Area. I graduated from UC Davis. From there, I gained employment with the National Park Service, was with them for about 33 years, most recently at Gettysburg National Military Park. In fact, most of my time was at Gettysburg National Military Park.
So what drew you from the military park here to Gettysburg College? What was it that made you say, I want to work at Gettysburg College?
I was in a law enforcement position with the National Park Service. I was also approaching retirement. And so I decided that I would put in an application at the Gettysburg College, which is actually has turned out to be a great move, and I'm very pleased that the college did offer me a position here.
And how long have you been working here at Gettysburg?
It'll be 6 years in October.
Can you talk a little bit about the transition from working as a law enforcement officer with the National Park Service to then coming to Gettysburg College and working sort of as this community partner?
When I started working here and was adjusting to the working with students in residential buildings as a liaison officer, that was a relatively new experience for me. The RC and RAs who were in Paul Hall, that's the building I was first assigned to, were very helpful in guiding me and helping me along the way. Often would meet with them, talk to them about suggestions, and together we would come up with ideas. But I do credit them with helping me to become the officer that I have become here at Gettysburg College.
So take us through a typical day. What is it that you do from day to day with the Department of Public Safety? What are some of your typical responsibilities? What are some things that you do every day?
Obviously, it varies from day to day. No 2 days are the same, but our focus from day to day is to maintain the safety and security of the campus community. But we do provide a variety of services throughout the day, anything from jump-starting vehicles, providing security escorts, responding to medical emergencies, like I said, there's just a variety of things that come up throughout the day.
So one of the things that you do often is respond to sort of emergencies that may come up, or if, you know, there's all these unique situations. When you're approaching a situation, what are some of the things that you do to help prepare you to tackle that situation?
Again, that would vary on the nature of the incident that's reported. We obviously are thinking of safety throughout from beginning to end, even on our approach. Depending on the nature of the emergency might determine how we will approach in a safe manner.
DPS doesn't have the ability to carry firearms with them, and they do not have any arresting capabilities because they aren't a police force. They're a Department of Public Safety. So how do you think that affects the way that you do your job versus when you worked in the law enforcement realm?
Actually, my approach is still pretty much the same, other than being cognizant of the fact that I don't have a handgun with me. So if I was dispatched to a situation involving, again, I would take a different approach. And for one thing, we'd be notifying the Gettysburg police, and they would be the ones to actually go in and handle that particular incident. But we could still assist in a peripheral way.
So one of the things that DPS has been focusing on is the idea of community service-oriented patrolling. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and how that affects the way that you do your job?
Yes. Community service-oriented patrolling is a proactive philosophy and approach to building relationships and partnerships with the campus community. It's a proactive approach in resolving problems that the community may face. And it's a collaborative effort. So we are constantly looking for ways to build respect and rapport with the community and interacting with them on a positive in a positive direction for the betterment of the campus community. I can just give you one quick example, because it's sometimes just a simple thing that we work on and sometimes it's something more complicated. But one example would be there was a residential building that did not have a bike rack, and consequently bikes were being parked down the sidewalk and in the path of pedestrians because there really wasn't a place for them to put their bikes. So we worked together with the residents and also with facilities, and we were able to get a bike rack installed, and now bikes are being placed in the rack and out of the pedestrian way.
I think it's probably fair to say that you're among the more recognizable faces of DPS among a lot of students here. How do you go about building relationships specifically with students, and how do you think that helps how you execute your job responsibilities?
I guess for one thing, I'm always mindful that I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve the students and the campus community. And I just have to say, this has been a really great place to work. And I feel that there's always been positive interaction with the students. So I just build on all that.
And I think, there are also some students who, whether it's parking issues or whatever it is, they sometimes feel like, DPS is out to get them in some ways. Do you think I'm assuming you don't think that's the case. How do you approach that relationship where you are serving, but you also have, these guidelines and policies that you're enforcing?
Yes, I understand that perception. And obviously that makes sense. The fact that we're just in a uniform would, I think, influence someone to have that perception. But as you indicated, that's really not what we're here to do. We're not out looking to get people into trouble. We really are here to provide a safe environment. But the actions we do take are also based on campus policy and expectations of the college. And that's often what I remind students, is that we are operating under the same parameters as the students. We have to comply with the expectations.
And do you find that building relationships with students can kind of help head off problems before they become issues?
Yes, I would like to think so. And I am aware of a few situations where that was the case. I do recall some cases where when I arrived on scene, afterwards the student told me they felt a lot better that I was there assisting in the situation.
On the weekends, obviously, undergraduate students that may still be minors often go out and partake of alcoholic beverages and drink at fraternities and things like that. How does DPS approach enforcing the underage drinking rules when maybe because through your community service oriented patrolling, you know that somebody is underage and you see them and you think that they might have been drinking? How do you handle, you know, those types of situations? And how do you decide whether you're going to intervene in a situation or whether you're going to not intervene in a situation? What is the calculus there?
Well, by policy and expectations of the college, we are expected to intervene, so we could not ignore or turn away from a situation. Particularly if we see someone that may be impaired to the level that it's also a question of their safety. We will definitely intervene in those situations.
DPS officers or G-Force officers will often stand outside of fraternities on weekends. And so what sorts of things are those officers looking for as they're standing outside? Are they actively looking for policy violations? Are they just looking to have a presence? Are they looking to maintain the peace? What is the goal of standing on the porch of these fraternities?
Having an officer present actually helps prevent situations. And also there's times when members of a fraternity or those organizers that are sponsoring an event will come forward and point something out to an officer that they feel needs attention. So the real point of it is just to make sure things go smoothly. Everybody has a good, fun night. A safe event as well. And that's really what we're there for.
What is your favorite part of the job?
By far the students. They're number one on the list. I look forward every day coming to work at Gadsburg College, and that's simply because of the students. The students are the ones that clearly make Gadsburg College great.
So recently, perhaps as part of this sort of community service-oriented patrolling, DPS has been increasing sort of its social media presence, and it's, I've seen some pictures of you in particular at events. You know, when you go to an event, like I saw you were a celebrity judge at the Cupcake Wars a few weeks ago, what's your goal in that event? You know, obviously you're there to, you know, help out an organization, but is that part of that sort of community service-oriented patrolling approach?
Yes, I'm actually the liaison officer for the sororities, for all of the sororities. So I believe that's one of the reasons that I was selected for that. But it is to support the different events on campus, support the students. And in that case, that also was a fundraiser. So we were glad to support that as well.
So you mentioned being a liaison officer, and there are liaison officers to the fraternities, there are liaison officers to the sororities, and also to the first-year residence halls. So can you talk a little bit about what you do in that liaison role with the different buildings that you're in and the relationships that you have with the residence life, student staff members that are in those buildings, and how you work together to create a community?
Sure, yeah. Each officer is actually assigned to different residential buildings, primarily the first-year buildings, and then different active groups on the campus, such as you mentioned, in the fraternities and sororities. So each officer, through different meetings, and just getting to know the students in the different groups, builds these partnerships and relationships that, again, we are working together for the common good of the campus and the different events on the campus.
What do you enjoy doing when you're not working for DPS?
Well, one of the things I enjoy doing when I'm not working for DPS is I actually like supporting the students in different sporting events, and concerts, again, various events on campus. So sometimes you may see me at a game or an event during the time that I'm not on duty.
In a street-clothed DPS officer off duty.
Sometimes. Sometimes I'll be in my casual uniform, but yes, other times I will be in street clothes.
And what are some of your other hobbies? I know that you said that you do like to support the students, but do you have any other hobbies, things that you like to do when you're off duty, when you're not on campus?
I do like reading, although I at times don't have the time I would like to do the reading that I would like to do. And otherwise, it's just a matter of going out for a walk somewhere, like on the battlefield, again, because I've worked there for all those years, and there's some areas there I like to go for a walk. And also at Pine Grove Furnace, there's a really nice hiking area up there that I like to go to.
What's your favorite book that you've read recently?
One recent book, well, it wasn't all that recent, but a book that I did read was Unbroken, which I know there was a movie based on the book. I did not go to the movie. I read the book and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add about the community service-oriented patrolling that you do here at Gettysburg?
Yes, I just would like to emphasize that it is a team effort on the part of all the officers, and then, of course, us working with the campus. But each officer contributes in a variety of ways to provide the services that we provide for the campus.
Well, Officer Pierce from the Department of Public Safety, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me to be here.
So one last note out the door here today. This is my last edition of On Target. I'm going to be graduating at the commencement ceremony this upcoming weekend. And I just wanted to say that throughout my time here at WZBT and at the Gettysburgian, it's really just been such an honor to be able to report the news and to see the growth that we've had. And a lot of that is because of Ben, my co-host here, and also my managing news editor, who's going to be taking over in both of those roles. He'll be serving as the news director here at WZBT. And he'll also be taking over as editor-in-chief over at the Gettysburgian. The Gettysburgian is getting brand new offices next year. Very exciting. We'll be moving into the GLC's current office.
They're
suite,
new to us, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely
no,
new
we're
to...
we're very excited.
Yes, definitely. And so, you know, we've grown our readership, certainly online. We didn't really have an online edition to speak of, and now we're digital first. We have thousands of people listening to us, or reading us, and also hundreds of people listening to our podcast every week, a brand new podcast this year with the help of Ben. And so I think really we've come a long way, and I'm really excited to see where Ben takes it moving forward. And so it's, you know, bittersweet to be graduating, but I'm excited for the road ahead and as I move on to law school and as Ben moves into these roles.
And where are you going to law school, Jamie?
I'm going to the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law. It's actually the second oldest law school in the country.
What's the oldest law school in the country?
William & Mary.
William & Mary is the second oldest college in the country. You know what the first oldest college in the country is?
Is it Harvard?
It is Harvard. All right, well, there's just some fun trivia for you. That's the kind of thing I know you've come to expect from On Target. And if you're someone who's an esoteric pedant, someone who is pedantic, I don't know, I'm sure there's a noun form of that somewhere.
Sure there is.
Well, if you're someone who thinks that you can carry on ridiculous conversations about the grammatical properties of the word pedantic, you should audition to take over Jamie's chair on Target. We'll be holding open auditions. They're all by appointment, as in I'll appoint someone to hold an open audition.
Oh, jeez.
And then they'll join us beginning in August. So new on-target programming will be coming in August. I do think I've been mapping out some potential guests. I think season 2 of On Target will be as exciting as season 1, although it will be hard to match the level of cynical banter that we have achieved
on that note, certainly it's been a team effort working with Jamie. It's been great since I was that annoying first-year student who sent Jamie a list of grievances, my issues with the Gettysburgian, and he said, great, why don't you come fix them? And I said, And thus, the partnership was born. So it's been great working with Jamie, and of course, wish you all the best as you move on to law school. Don't sue us for libel. Not that we'd ever do that.
Certainly not.
All right. And I think with that, season one of On Target is in the books.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Mike Raleigh and Officer Ricky Pierce for being our featured guests today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Be sure to subscribe to On Target on TuneIn, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever else you get your podcasts, as long as it's somewhere we publish.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, of the class of 2019, who was a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.